Hi, it's Rabbi Jim Egolf. I want to thank you so much for joining me. Well, we're going to take a little bit of a look at one of the difficulties that comes out of the Torah portion dealing with the golden calf. Needless to say, the golden calf is not one of the bright moments in the Torah. In the Talmud, the golden calf was referred to as Oto HaDavar, meaning that thing, because nobody wanted to really kind of mention, like, the biggest goof that the Israelites had done in the desert when speaking with God or when speaking even in the Torah text. So we're going to take a little bit of a look at what happens when the Torah tells us to do two different things. And more than just semantics, what are the moral implications or the action implications that we might actually need to think about when approaching other issues in our lives that tend to be in conflict? I want to thank you so much for joining me. You can always email me, Rav Jim, that's R-A-V as in Victor, J-I-M, at AOL.com, or you can call me on my Skype line. And if you did so, you would definitely be one of the first, so I would love to hear from you. 610-624-3441 is that Skype number. Again, thank you so much for joining me, and shalom. Teaching in this particular podcast because it involves a little bit of Hebrew, but the Hebrew actually, and the lesson from the Hebrew comes to teach a lesson about morality and how we need to be approaching things probably in our lives today, and speaks to greater issues. But I want to focus in first because the Torah portion this week was Ki Tisah, which is the Torah portion about the golden calf. After the calf has been destroyed and the first set of Ten Commandments has been destroyed, God turns to Moses and says, Pasalecha shnei luchot, literally engrave or carve for yourself two stones similar or to actually just like the first ones. This is Exodus chapter 34, verse 1. Well, there's a difficulty with this particular verse that arises because back in Exodus chapter 20, verse 4, this verse seems to contradict a verse there that says there, Lo ta'aseh lecha fesel, do not make for yourselves something that is a graven or a carved image. So the difficulty comes is that we have these two words that share the same Hebrew root, Pei, Samech, and Lamed. And we're told to do one in one place and not do it in another place. What to do with this? Now, if you refer to the PDF that's attached to this particular podcast, you will see how those words are lined up. And I've tried to give you a little bit of a sense of what the verses actually look like and what I'm about to explain. So, if you open that up, it would be helpful. Looking at these two verses, Rabbi Jeffrey Ratz focuses not on the this word, noun in one place, verb in another place, pasal, pei, samech, lamed. He focuses rather on the word lecha. Lecha, lamed in Hebrew before a word usually means two or four. And cha is second person singular possessive. So, to yourself or for you. And Rabbi Ratz focuses on this word lecha and where it's placed in relationship to pasal. This is all out of Learn Torah with a series of rabbis, which is published by Torah Ora in 5755, the Jewish year 5755. So he focuses on this phrase lecha. And he points out that in Exodus chapter 20, the lecha appears before fesel. And then he points to the verse from this past week, Exodus 34, that the lecha appears after the verb pasal. And he teaches out of this that at some level, and I'm kind of taking liberties to extend it along, that the Exodus chapter 20 places this word lecha before pasal, and it's interpreted by Rabbi Ratz to some extent, and by me to the purposes of this particular drash, that the activity of making the graven image is one that is much more self-serving, because for yourself appears before the actual graven image or what have you. You know, there's this there's a joke that kind of speaks to this, that we tend to see the world only through our own eyes and our own understandings and perceptions. And there's a story of a little boy who had an old style telephone, and his mother called to him from downstairs when the phone rang, and he picked up the phone, he answered it, and his mother called down and said, "Who is it?" And the little boy said, "I can't tell you." And the mother said, "Well, why can't you tell me?" And the little boy said, "Well, I'm trying to look through the holes in the telephone, but it's too dark in there." Okay, there is this notion that we tend to look at the world often through our own very narrow visions. However, in the Exodus chapter 34 verse, where it says pasal lecha, the lecha comes afterwards. So the activity needs to be done, but it's not being done primarily for Moses first, but it's being done because there may be a value in it, and he needs to kind of figure out himself within the activity. It's not being done for himself, as Exodus 20 would suggest. The activity is done, and then he needs to figure himself out within that particular activity. Now, in our me-first world, this is an important distinction. Because too often, we're like that Exodus chapter 20. For me has to be ahead of any activity. For me. Now, when we approach the world this way, it blinds us. It makes us blind in a couple ways. First, it blinds us to the value or effort or work of anything that we don't find interesting. How many people can pass a work of art or hear music that they may not particularly like or think or even express, that they may find no value because it's just not their taste? Because their taste has to be what matters only. When we do this, we're making our own tastes our idols. In a second way, it blinds us to developing appreciation. When we place the lecha for you, or all too often in our culture, what's in it for me, we can't value anything, even if we don't like it, and appreciate all the work that goes into it. We diminish the world because we're making idols out of our own tastes and senses, and we refuse to value the fact that others may do things differently. Well, this is beginning to play out in a really difficult way in parts of our world, and particularly with regards to the rift that's developing between generations, how they understand, or more often, don't understand each other. It is amazing to me how few people who have been around for, shall we say, multiple decades, how they just cannot understand or fathom the new young generation. It's hard because the older generation often feels, according to the book, The Rise of Millennials, the millennials look upon the baby boomers and they consider them to be smug, or at least they consider them to be smug before this recent stock market crash, and now they're just considering themselves to be smug and now silly. There's a genuine lack of understanding why the new generation does not want, respect, or even consider previous generations as little more than, well, they were okay for their day, but out of touch with our new super fantastic reality. part of this is that the battles of the old generation, the me generation, are absolute turnoffs to this new group of young people. Our 20s and 30s, and those who are quickly rising into this age, have moved from generation me to what they're now calling generation we. And I'm not talking about the Nintendo game. It's spelled W-E, we, as a communal identity. They are more willing to understand that we are in this together, whether that is a synagogue, city, society, even a planet. When they see the various challenges created by the previous generations, they stop, and we might want to stop and think about it. I mean, literally, what do they see right now? The, let's say, 22-year-old. Financial crisis, global warming, military infrastructures, an overdependence on oil. These are the elements of their reality, where many of them look at older generations and wonder why these things garnered unquestioned acceptance if they were so dangerous. At some level, they were assumed to be part of the way things had always been. Yet, when we step back now and have to face the threats that these givens present, older generations find themselves at a loss because the threats were part of the accepted construct of the world. Now, I just said that, but let me give you a really tactile example. Watch any Bond movie with Sean Connery, and chances are they're smoking. It was just accepted, even though it was killing them. This is different for the younger generation. They look and with a skeptical eye reject not only the outcomes, but increasingly they reject the very structures that undergird the problems that they see and the problems that we face. They may not want to be part of owning a car or buying a house or having any connection to the things that define the American dream, because for them, this dream created the mess we now see. And you know what? They may be more right in more ways than any of the previous generations want to admit. Going back to Rabbi Ratz's teaching, when we look at activities and we place ourselves first and then the activity, then we run the chance of idolatry at every turn. We have the possibility of actually only defining the world through our own narrow understandings of that world. However, when we place the activity first, or the possibilities first, and then ask ourselves, how do we fit into this? Not that we have to accept it if we don't like it, but how do we fit into this? Shouldn't we do certain things because it's the right thing to do, even if it's not going to be the most beneficial thing for ourselves? And that's where the question rises from just being one of semantics to being one of a moral teaching. Too often we live in a world where we have seen people who have done it for themselves first and then the activity. Perhaps there's a moral argument to be made to breaking down the idol of the self and understanding that there are certain activities that we need to be doing for the benefit of everyone, whether it's cutting back on our carbon emissions, whether it's fixing our financial infrastructure, whether it's helping the poor, because to have a healthy society, maybe me first doesn't work to get us to that particular point, but maybe we need to do the action first and then appreciate how we benefit later on. I'm wishing you the best of weeks. Shavua Tov.
Mm-hmm.